under rubble of her home. She cries out for her parents, but the voices are gone. She cannot understand. She's confused. She's alone. There is blood on her hands, but it's not her fault. Not her fight, not her war. She's too
A warm welcome to this week's edition of Remember Palestine. We're the only show that is solely dedicated to the plight of Palestinians and the global solidarity which exists in support. I am Amina Taylor, your host for this week. Thank you for joining us. Coming up, the historic prisoner swap deal between Palestine and Israel continues to dominate the headlines after detailed coverage in the mainstream press has been almost exclusively dedicated to Gilad Shalit. People are very familiar with his name and his backstory, but the 1,027 Palestinian prisoners on the other side of the deal, well, some of them on this list after decades in captivity, they remain anonymous. In this edition, we shed light on the Palestinians who have waited in agony to be reunited with their families, some of whom were held without charge. And with this topic in the news, is there any room for conversations around the Palestinian statehood bid? Our esteemed guests might be able to help shed some light on these burning issues. Baroness Jenny Tong, a Liberal Democrat peer who was openly criticized by her own party for her ethical and public stance. She joins us alongside Samira Qureshi from the influential Middle East Monitor. But before that, Press TV correspondent Ashraf Shannon was one of the first to speak with a handful of Palestinian detainees who were freed as part of this historic exchange deal. Here's his report.
477 Palestinian prisoners arrived Tuesday to the Gaza Strip in the first phase of the prisoners' swap deal with Israel. A swap deal between Hamas and Israel saw the release of Palestinian prisoners in exchange for Israeli soldier Gilad Shalit. At least 200,000 Gazans greeted the released prisoners upon their arrival to Gaza City. In the first few days out of captivity, released prisoners spent most of their time with their families, especially their mothers, who were very excited to see them after many years in Israeli jail.
I couldn't believe my eyes. I was dying to see him and hold him in my arms.
It was the happiest day of my life to meet the son whom I thought I will never see again. His father and all the families were extremely happy to see him.
Released prisoners spoke of their difficult days inside Israeli jails, including physical and psychological torture.
As prisoners, we went through a lot of pain and suffering behind bars, and most people can't even imagine what we had to go through throughout our years in custody. A prisoner doesn't know if he is alive or dead inside prison cells. We spent many years in very harsh conditions.
I am very grateful to those who sacrificed themselves to set us free, and I want everyone to know that prisoners languish in Israeli prisons, and I hope the rest of the prisoners will see freedom soon.
Most of the released prisoners were serving multiple life sentences and thought they will never see their families again.
I never thought that I would be free, especially from an Israeli prison. And it's almost impossible to be released, except in a prisoner swap deal, especially someone like me who is sentenced to multiple life sentences. The only thing I ever hoped for while in prison is to die with my family around me and not in Israeli jail.
Under the swap deal, Israel will release 550 more prisoners after 2 months in the second phase of the agreement. Released prisoners hope that the remaining Palestinian prisoners will be reunited soon with their loved ones. Ashraf Shannon, reporting for Remember Palestine Gaza.
And for more around this issue, my first guest from the Middle East Monitor, she joins me now. She's the organization's political analyst, Samira Qureshi. Thank you so much. We saw jubilant scenes there, not all reported in the mainstream media, and in fact, criticized heavily. In fact, what were your original thoughts about the numbers in exchange for one soldier?
With the Middle East Monitor, I mean, the way we saw it was the fact that so many were released for the Israeli soldier, it sort of showed how the Palestinians had this kind of motivation, this kind of the resistant movement was so strong. It kind of pushed Israel into the corner, kind of forced them to take this opportunity because there was no other way that they were going to get the Israeli soldier out.
Is there a sense here that the Palestinians have done well out of this deal, or...?
I think so. I mean, from the commentators that we've listened to and from analysts who've actually focused on this issue for so long...
Was it supposed to be as historic? Because when the newspapers talk about this deal, when they comment on the figures, mm-hmm. it seemed it's a high priority for Israel to have this individual back with his family, but in exchange for so many Palestinians.
But I don't... also... Other than the number, if you look at where these prisoners have come from originally,
yes.
usually in the past the deals have always talked about the West Bank or Gaza, but here they've actually released prisoners from the Palestinian 48 territories, including Golan Heights and Jerusalem, which is unprecedented. I mean, in the past negotiations, Israel have always been adamant, only West Bank and Gaza. We're not going to look at anyone else. We don't recognize anyone else. But here they've actually been forced to recognize, and they've actually been forced to actually realize that if we are going to get the Israeli soldier back, we need to actually do what they want. And in the past, Abbas and the PA have never been able to actually bring anything to the table. But in this instance, Hamas had this Israeli soldier and they were forced to actually recognize this and actually say, OK, if we are going to first make an impact and actually get him released, especially Netanyahu, you know, he's having a difficult time in Israeli politics. So for him to show that I have a standing, this is his way of saying, okay, I have really, in my term, I have released the Israeli
soldier.
This
was my doing. Yes, this was
exactly.
on my watch.
And you saw the arrogance when he came out and said, you know, he went to his father and said, I've brought home your son.
Every politician likes to hold their hands up with that one.
Yeah.
How about the way in which it has been covered? Mm-hmm. Have you any
mainstream
reactions about the way in which this story has gone down?
We're not really surprised in the way in which British mainstream media has covered the story. I mean, obviously, they kept on mentioning the Israeli soldier's name, you know, Gilad Shalit, but they've, you know, not even mentioning any, I think maybe one or two of the high figure Palestinian prisoners who've been released.
But to say how bad they were and that
exactly,
they shouldn't have been.
Exactly.
Yes, yes.
Whereas if you look at the media within the region, they've actually covered it really well. And I think because they recognize the fact that these prisoners have come from not only the territories, the occupied territories, West Bank and Gaza, but the whole 48 Palestinian territories. So they've sort of recognized that this is actually, it's kind of given strength to the resistance movement. You know, they've actually given them credibility as well, that, you know, what they've been doing is right. You know, these prisoners have been incarcerated in prison. Some, like, for example, there's Nail Barghouti from the West Bank. He's been incarcerated for over 30 years. And now he's been one of the people released. And he was very highly political, very active in his, you know, 30 years ago. And he continues to be that. So it kind of shows... commentators are really excited about it. They're thinking that this is maybe, perhaps, it can be kind of repeated.
The
soon.
Beginning of
yes,
something.
Exactly. Exactly.
All right. Stay with us, Samira, because later in the program, in fact, in moments actually, we'll be joined by the courageous, outspoken, and highly respected Baroness Jenny Tong. But before we meet the woman herself, let's have a look at some of the memorable moments in her jam-packed career. Jasmine Jiwa went to the archives for us.
Baroness Jenny Tong has been met with fierce controversy when speaking out in support of Palestine, but that has not deterred her.
The whole of the time the occupation has been going on, Israel goes over the West Bank and Gaza with Apache helicopters, shooting down people, killing people in their hundreds and doing collateral damage. That is why Hamas... Well, I've seen it, I've been under them.
Although some of her comments meant she was asked to step down as Lib Dem spokesperson for children by the then party leader Charles Kennedy, she went on with renewed effort to break the Israeli siege on Gaza and was one of the first politicians to compare the situation there to apartheid.
I suppose, as a doctor, before I went into Parliament, the thing that struck me most of all was the scarcity of clean water.
Why is it that Israel is allowed to break international law, defy the Geneva Conventions, abuse the human rights of Palestinians and kill them on a daily basis, and yet no one takes any notice.
She has won the respect and admiration of journalists, politicians and campaigners for having the courage to defend human rights in often difficult circumstances.
And the lady herself, Baroness Tong, joins us now. She just mentioned a rather funny aside there before we introduced her. You've taken a lot of slack and a lot of very public criticisms from within your own party and beyond for this stance. Has it been worth it, Baroness Tong?
Of course it has. It's been worth it if only a dozen more people in Europe have found out about the plight of the Palestinians. That was why I did what I did. That's what I say what I say. I have no... I don't hate Israel. I love Jewish people. But they have to realise that their future lies in recognising the rights of Palestinians and obeying international law.
This prisoner release deal, this historic swap, how do you read the situation?
I think it's absolutely wonderful. You know, the first, what struck me first was 1,001, that was a football score. You know, I've been watching all the rugby last weekend and thought, 1,001, boy, that's some score. How did they manage that? And then I thought, being a mother and a granny, you know, imagine suddenly finding out after 30 years that your husband still snores.
You know, these little day-to-day issues.
Or your son still won't eat greens. Or, I mean, it's such a long time, but you think of the joy. I mean, it makes me quite emotional to think about the joy in all those hundreds of families being reunited, including Gilad Shalit, who's had all the attention, of course. Great joy there too. So that's the next thing. But then the thing that fascinates me most of all, and Samira's talked about it a lot, is the fact that the Israelis have been talking to Hamas. Now, I think that is the most significant thing of the whole lot, because the Israelis always say they can't talk to Hamas. They won't talk to Hamas until Hamas do A, B and C, all these conditions they throw in their way all the time. But they've been doing it. And that means that they have established a rapport with Hamas. And on the other hand, Fatah and President Abbas have to recognise that the Israelis have been talking to Hamas, and Hamas has had a great success in the prisoner exchange with Israel. That should make Fatah and the people in that organisation more easily talk to Hamas. I think it's very good news all round that people have been communicating with one another, and that is the essential thing if we're going to start a peace process.
And is that something that you also thought about at the organisation, that this could be the beginning of something,
exactly.
However small, it could be the beginning?
Exactly. I mean, there are still more than 4,000 prisoners who've yet to be released. Many of them are children as well. I think part of this deal was meant to include all women being released, but there are still 9 who haven't been released. Mm-hmm. So I was reading a report today that said within the next few days, these 9 women will be released rather than wait for the next second phase. So it's something that we are hopeful for. Mm. And we're looking forward to it.
I mean, that's something that Samira's quite right to remind us. There are still 6,000-7,000 prisoners mm-hmm. still in Israeli jails, still waiting one day to be reunited with their families. But on the other hand, you know, I think that this is a very happy time for all of those families who've seen their loved ones returned. And it's a good and positive thing that people have been talking to one another, and especially against the background of the Arab Spring, all the things that's been happening around the whole area, Israel has to realise that they've got to come to some accommodation with the Palestinians. They have got to settle this problem. They don't They mustn't wait, as they seem to be doing, until they see how things pan out. It could be 20 or 30 years before we know just what the Middle East is going to be like. But Israel should not risk that. They really must solve this huge problem that they've made for themselves, entirely their fault. They've made this problem, and they've got to solve it by giving the Palestinians their land back and creating a secure and prosperous state of Palestine.
I mentioned in the intro there very briefly that the Palestinian statehood bid seems to have been put on the back burner somehow, and in some cases rightly so. This is a historic moment. People need to focus on what's been achieved here. But any chance of that going hand in hand with this operation?
But it should. It should. If the international community, and in particular the United States and the Europeans, we've got to realise that this is a unique time. We've had the release of all these prisoners. We've got all these people talking to one another when they said they never ever would. And at the same time, we've got President Abbas making a bid for Palestinian sovereignty at the United Nations. It's a very exciting time. And if we miss this opportunity, I mean, that phrase is so hard used, isn't it? You know, we never fail to take the opportunity to miss an opportunity. Well, we mustn't. And I think the Europeans and the United States have really got to get on with this now.
There's been so many comparisons made about what's going on in Northern Ireland on the eve of the peace agreement there, when the maze was essentially thrown open and prisoners from both sides were released. Could this be a template for the Palestinian situation?
Well, people are always saying that, but I think that every situation is unique. Yes, there are elements in Northern Ireland, and certainly talking to the IRA was one of the big leaps forward too in the peace process in Northern Ireland, that our government suddenly realised that they really ought to start talking to the people who are causing the most trouble. So there are similarities, but this is unique, and you know, it's time it was settled, and it lies at the root of so many problems in the Middle East and in the wider world. You know, people are furious about the plight of the Palestinians, and it's a problem that we have to solve for the future of our children and grandchildren.
Bernestone, Samira, stay with me. We'll be coming back after this, because despite the length of the struggle, Palestine needs to know that the world stands shoulder to shoulder with her, and the continuing efforts from some sitting on my panel right now to bring peace and justice to the region. Here's just a very small flavour of events showing solidarity in this week's Global Resistance.
Cyclists have set off on a 12-day ride from Palestine to Saudi Arabia to peddle a message about the Palestinian bid for recognition by the United Nations. Holding the Palestinian, Jordanian and Saudi flags, their slogan is, "From Jerusalem al-Quds to Mecca, yes to a Palestinian state." The journey was backed by Palestinian officials who said the initiative, which represents the Palestinian youth, is an excellent idea, both from a political and religious point of view.
Put a fist in the air and never be afraid. Never retreat, never run away. Stand your ground when you are confronted by people that hate the movement and don't believe that Palestinians exist. You better stand.
A hip-hop artist at the Students for Justice in Palestine event at Columbia University in the USA rapped lyrics that left the crowd with the conviction to throw their support behind the Palestinians. Artist Immortal Technique told the students that doing nothing would leave the world subject to future labelling as being a century of uncivilized people.
And we're really excited today to have an educational teach-in on the UN statehood.
Students and academics in New Mexico put their heads together to try to better understand the implications of Palestine's statehood bid.
The debate needs to be about enforcing international law where it lies.
The event, called a teach-in, featured presentations from a panel of four people, including an international lawyer and an anthropologist.
I'm back with Samira Qureshi and Baroness Jenny Tong. We're talking the prisoner swap deal and what a historic occasion this may be to just move forward a small kernel that could turn into a mighty big oak. Baroness Tong, you talked about unity there, and we saw a little bit of that with the global resistance, people discussing the issues, becoming more aware of what all aspects of this could actually mean. Unity was crucial for you. Why did you say that?
Unity on the Palestinian side is crucial for me, not because I don't understand the history of the divide and why Hamas and Fatah fell out. I understand all of that, and I recognise that the elections in Palestine years ago now, 2006 was it, 2007, were not recognised by us when Hamas won. That was all wrong. But if there's one thing that is always thrown up by politicians in the West about the Palestinians, it's they're divided. There's no one to negotiate with because the two sides are divided. Well, in the last few weeks, we've seen President Abbas go to the United Nations and plead for sovereignty for Palestine. That was a brilliant move, brilliant publicity for Palestine, a great thing to do. We've seen Hamas actually talking to the Israelis and negotiating this fantastic prisoner swap. That means that both sides have done so much good recently that they really ought to join together now and say, here we are, we're a united front. Come on, let's talk.
Would the media support this, you think, Samira?
I think so. I mean, bar the fact, you know, the media, have their own kind of perceptions. If you look at the people on the street, I mean, if you saw the people in Gaza, you saw the video there, you know, they had Fatah flags, Hamas flags, Palestinian flags. They were all flying all the flags. I think they had the red flags for the Popular Front as well. So, you know, everyone's there together. And I think the media are aware that they should be reflecting the mood of the people. And I think that's very, if you see the Arab uprisings, during the revolution this year, I mean, the media are fully aware that if they go against what the mood of the people are, then the people kind of turn on them. So at the moment, especially the media such as Press TV, Al Jazeera, they've been doing it really well. They're kind of reflecting the mood of the people. And I think that's what they have to continue to do. I don't know if the British mainstream media will reflect that, but I mean, I think a lot of people are actually going to other sources for information now and other media sources.
And very quickly, Baroness Tong, there is a change. It's just how fast will this affect things from the top down?
Well, I said earlier I was an optimist. It's a very difficult subject. And of course, at the moment, with the recession and the financial situation in Europe and in America, everyone is obsessed by that and what's going on. And it's actually getting it into the news. It's actually getting people to start focusing on these things. So actually, I go back again to the bid for sovereignty at the UN, the prisoner swap that's just taken place, that's caught the headlines, it's caught the news, and we politicians should actually try and carry the ball from there.
Perfect way to end, and I'm afraid end we must, because that's all the time we have on this edition of Remember Palestine. And thank you so much for making us a part of your week's viewing. Continue to support this show, but more importantly, support the Palestinians by sending your comments, suggestions, emails, ideas, and supporting movements wherever you can. On behalf of the team, I've been Amina Taylor. Until next time, bye-bye.